From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, what we do, we come together and we form this thing that we like to call the Podcast of Champions, which now talks all things Big Ten football and national champions 2 years in a row. Been doing good since we started covering the Big Ten.
Yeah, baby.
I think it's us. It must be us.
Yeah, 100%.
Back-to-back national championship. So I know it's been a few days, but we're going to recap the national championship game and talk about some of the offseason stuff going on. It's sad, the end of college football season, David.
It is sad. It is sad. It brings heartache. But like for me, I'll be honest with you, I feel like it ended a month ago. And that's not just me like playing with time. This playoff dragged on.
There was a lot.
And on. And I think, you know, I realize this is a drum that was banged immediately after the game. And we're a little late to it because Ryan had to go on several vacations. But they should look into condensing this schedule a little bit.
I think they need to fix it a little bit. But I did love the playoff.
It stretches way too long.
Yeah. We got a super chat like already.
Oh,
Matthew.
Oh, baby.
A natty. 11-6 postseason. Great first year with you guys. Love you guys. Thanks, Matthew.
Aw, very sweet.
One of our loyal Big Ten listeners.
Yes, and, one of our newest Big Ten listeners.
Yes, Wisconsin guy. We love it. So we're probably going to be a lot of user-generated content here on the show going forward. So get those questions in.
Off-season topics are the best.
Yeah, big10cast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Leave us a voicemail. Shoot us a text. We love either one of those. Tweet us at B1G Podcast. And if you have Apple or Spotify, go to the Podcast of Champions and leave us a 5-star rating. Those are awesome. On Apple, you could also leave a review and get paid for it if it's good and we read it and it's funny and it wins the week. Thanks to John and Brea, I got some more Trader Joe's gift cards to give away. I've sent a bunch out. I still owe a couple. So if you, one of the latest reviews, I'll get that out to you real soon now that I'm back from my little vacation. Through Southeast Asia and
yes.
Hawaii. Hawaii was work. But, mm-hmm. And I'm here now. I'm back. I recorded a show. Was I in Thailand or was I in?
You were in Thailand.
Thailand, yeah.
Yeah. Which is actually the source of our newest review. Are you ready for it?
No way, really? Yeah. Okay, let's get the reviews.
So this is one that's going to require some explication from me because I went on a little rant against you and it seems to have ruffled a couple of feathers here.
Oh. All right,
this is from Nicola J.H. Regarding the broader educational merits of travel. He quotes me, "That's the dumbest thing. The people who say that, no, you learn how to drink beer and eat food in a different place. No, you learn from reading things. That's how you learn things. I love people who are like, oh no, I'm going to go experience it. No, you're just doing a tourist thing. You're just eating food and drinking beer in a different place. It's got people speaking a different language at you, I guess, but your experience in Thailand right now, you just explained to me that you ate some pad thai. You know where I can get some pad thai? Around the corner. You know where I'm going to learn about Thailand? From a book. I'm not going to learn anything from standing there, ordering some pad thai, and sitting on a folding chair." Then the review begins.
Wait, that was, he transcribed you?
Yes.
Okay.
So clearly, ruffle the feather. Love the podcast, but as an example, maybe Dave can tell us how visiting Auschwitz does nothing to deepen one's understanding of humanity when it's all there in black and white on Wikipedia. He went Holocaust on me.
And today's like Holocaust Remembrance.
Yeah, God damn. 5 stars for an absolute hydrant of defiantly smug ignorance from literally the last person I'd expect. This is a college football podcast review, by the way. All right, Nicola, if we're making bad faith arguments, do you think I would have said the exact same thing to Ryan if he decided to go on a tour of Germany to look at concentration camps? Probably not. Yeah. Probably not.
I went to Dachau before.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's okay. That's a better vacation
right.
for you.
So Ryan is going on what I would call recreational tourism.
OK.
which is a different thing, which is a fun thing. It's a thing to experience, but you don't get to say when you're doing recreational tourism, I learned so much. No, no, that's not the priority. That's not what you were doing there. You weren't going to Thailand to learn. You were going to drink beer and eat food in a different place. You were going to Japan to eat, drink beer and eat food in a different place. You go to Cabo to drink beer and eat food in a different place. You're not Fisher. Learning about, like, I don't know, who was down there? Was that the, I don't think the Aztecs made it over there.
I don't think so.
No, this is, you know, probably some, you know, different tribe of Mesoamericans. But you're not going to learn about their culture. No. It's not a history tour. You're not looking at old battlefields. You are going there to drink beer, eat food. And so the important thing to understand here is sometimes I say things and they're a little hyperbolic. You may know this about me. But what I'm trying to do is talk shit about Ryan. Now, if I harmed anyone else in the talking shit at Ryan, so my apologies, not my goal. Not the end goal here.
People,
if you like to go on educational tours of Europe, you're probably extremely my people. Like, when I lived on the East Coast, do you know how many goddamn Civil War battlefields I went to? We don't need to talk about it. I went to one or two twice or maybe even three times. It happens.
Yeah.
I lived right by Kennesaw Mountain,
the you were just Battlefield eating State Park. Food and drinking beer at a different place, right? Like,
I didn't. I ate no food. I drank no beer. I just sat there and contemplated, as one does on an educational tour.
Okay.
So, anyway, no nerds were harmed in the making of that statement. That was all directed at Ryan.
Gotcha.
For being a recreational tourist.
I think we have to give that reviewer a gift card.
Absolutely.
Because he transcribed your terrible take.
My take was beautiful. It was a gorgeous thing, and I thank everyone for taking it in the good faith. And please don't think that I'm implying that a tour of a concentration camp would not in some way be educational and explicative for, you know, your worldview.
According to you, you go to Auschwitz, it's just eating food and drinking beer in a different place. That's David Woods.
I'm
going to put that up.
Has there ever been a more bad faith interpretation of a thing somebody has said? God damn.
He totally crushed you.
Damn. I might just need to take the rest of the podcast off. Fuck.
Sorry, Griffin.
Sorry, Griffin.
Was that the only review?
Yeah, that's the only one.
Okay,
but well, definite gift card there.
Winner. We love it. Thank you for that. To your take, David, Mark says, I'm an Oregon State. Oh, my God. Ohio State grad. This season was exhausting. We need to tighten this season a bit. Title game is going to Vegas in a couple of years, and it will take place January 25th. Insane. Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Mark said, he said that Matthew congratulated him and he says, thanks. Proud that Chip Kelly realized that he had Jeremiah Smith and several other NFL players. And then Andrew wants to know, this is a good one for you, David, is that Chip's first ring in 30 years of coaching?
Ooh.
I mean, he's won like conference championships and stuff, but I don't think ever a national title. I mean, it's pretty rare to get one.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Very rare.
What's wrong?
I just hate him so much.
Oh. Oh, he has a national title.
Yeah.
That's got to, like, don't you feel a little satisfaction knowing that the former UCLA head coach can go to a place like Ohio State?
I hope he lives out most of the rest of his years in shame and degradation.
Yeah. No, he like, that feeling, was it Daniel Snyder, the terrible owner of what was the Redskins and is now the Commanders? Like,
uh-huh.
Apparently he was just hating the success. Like, you take away the horrible owner and all of a sudden things get better. And he was really upset that they were doing well.
Yeah.
Until they got pumped in the last round. I did get to watch NFL playoffs this weekend, which I wasn't able to watch while I was traveling because it's hard to get American TV when you're over there. And this game we're going to talk about, I was listening to. Because I was watching it on YouTube, or I'd watch people's reactions on YouTube, but I couldn't get it live anywhere.
All right, so if you didn't watch it live, well, anyway, let's do the preamble thing here.
Yeah, we got to do the stuff, but yeah, we're gonna talk about this game. We had
the Ohio State Buckeyes.
And they were taking on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Give me that pot of gold.
Yeah.
Ohio State won 34-23. If you didn't watch, I don't think it was clear enough what happened on the first drive and how it influenced the rest of the game.
Okay.
Notre Dame drove down the field with a 18-play, 75-yard touchdown drive where they had the ball for 10 minutes. On that drive...
It was like 8 minutes or so. No, 10 minutes. Yeah, right. Yeah.
On that drive, Riley Leonard ran the ball 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9, 6, 7, 8, 9.
He ran nine times.
He ran the ball 9 times and was absolutely pummeled every single time he ran it. Very successfully, but was getting the absolute crap kicked out of him the entire way down the field, vomited after it, which can be a sign of many different things. One of which, just spitballing here, is a concussion, which nobody in football seems to care about anymore. Like there, it was a fad for a while.
It was a trend.
And now like nobody gives a shit anymore.
Like the protocol. You're like, yeah. Hey, how many fingers do I have up? 7. Okay, you're all fine.
Yeah, like they have captured the medical doctors, apparently, and now concussions are cool again. Anyway, he was hit several times and then vomited afterwards. Maybe he was just hit right in the stomach, or maybe it was all the times he fell on his head. Who can say? Hard to say. All I can say is that he wasn't the same after that. Didn't look right. Wasn't throwing it right. Didn't move right. And that was, they needed him to be doing that basically the entire game to try to control this thing. And he couldn't. Like, no, there's way. No way, even if he didn't have whatever that made him throw up, there's no way for a human to continue to do that, not against the quality athletes that Ohio State had up the middle. And from there, Ohio State really did just kind of control the game. I don't think there was anything particularly super impressive they were doing offensively.
I mean, just scoring every time they got the ball?
Well, I mean, impressive? They didn't do it every time they got the ball.
The first five times?
Yeah, okay, fine. But like in the second half, they allowed Notre Dame to get kind of back into it a little bit. But it was pretty efficient is what I would say. And there was some, you know, kind of tricky stuff that Chip Kelly was doing that you got to give him credit for, I guess, even if you're a hater like me. But Notre Dame had a chance late. They were down 31-15 after a long touchdown and Ohio State fumbled it. And then on the ensuing drive, Notre Dame again drove it down 12 plays, 70 yards, got into field goal range with it was a 4th and goal at the Ohio State 9, and they elected to kick the field goal. This was very controversial at the time. I still don't know exactly how I feel about it. I probably...
Don't kick the field goal.
I probably go for it, but I can see the argument for going for the field goal because making 2 touchdowns and 2 two-point conversions is... That's a lot that you're asking a team to do, and it's unlikely they're going to get all of that done. So if you kick the field goal, it puts the... The reality is you're probably going to need 3 drives to do it anyway. So kicking the field goal will make it all a little bit easier. That said, they didn't make the field goal. Scored a touchdown on the next drive.
It was doinked.
Yeah, scored a touchdown on the next drive, but it didn't quite come together for them. And then it was 31-23, and this is where the important stuff comes in. Because it's 31-23. All Ohio State has to do is get a couple first downs and the game's over, right? It's no big deal. Like, they can do that, right? Mm. But instead of just getting a couple first downs, they throw a fucking, sorry, Griffin, bomb to Jeremiah Smith for 56 yards to the Notre Dame 10. The 10 is important there because there was too much time left on the clock for Ohio State to just run the ball out. So they had to score again. It was either going to be a field goal or a touchdown unless they turned it over. That was important because the line we had on this game was 8.5 points.
Yes.
And Ohio State at that time was leading by 8 points. Mm. And so if Jeremiah Smith had gone down, say, even like 3 yards earlier, Ohio State probably could have run the clock out. Maybe wouldn't have, but I could have at least hoped. But no, at the 10, they were scoring no matter what. So thank you for that. Notre Dame for going, I think, zero coverage. How many times have we seen this? guys going zero coverage on like third and like medium to long.
Yeah.
And then they get the absolutely nuked because of it. Could we stop? Is that possible?
Yeah, so if you didn't know, anyway. Dave took Notre Dame at 8.5. I had Ohio State. And while this was going on, so Ohio State was in control and up by, what was it? Were they up by 16? Yeah, yep. up by 16. And Notre Dame scores and gets a two-point conversion. And I get a text while I'm walking around in Bangkok, Thailand, observing the Grand Palace, which is pretty awesome, by the way, if you get the chance to check it out. Taking pictures of everything. I get the, you know, and David gives me the text like, you know, what do great teams do? They cover. And that was, and so then I'm listening. So I have my headphones in, listening to the game, like on ESPN radio or whatever. And then when that bomb happens, I'm like, they're going to score and Dave's going to be so with the, I don't think I heard back, but I sent you pictures of like stuff I was looking at. I'm like, this is what I was looking at when Ohio State kicked that field goal. Did you feel like the field goal was the right call? Like, make it a impossible, make it an 11-point game. Like, I felt like that was the right thing to do. Like,
obviously.
I mean, you could get it blocked or whatever, but it seemed like it made sense. But yes, that was great. That was a glorious cover for me there. Yeah, I love that one. You talk about they weren't that impressive. Here's the drive chart. So Ohio State didn't get the ball till.
Okay, guys, in fairness, I am just a Chip Kelly hater. It's not rational. It's not correct. I understand that. I just hate him.
This is what Ohio State did when they had the ball. It was very limited, but touchdown, touchdown,
yeah,
touchdown, touchdown. Field goal where they got a really good field position and didn't do much with it. So you could say that. I mean, that was.
What was your favorite Will Howard incompletion?
Yeah.
Which of the four?
He went like 14 of 14 to start the game. Then they had a 6-play, 54-yard drive that they ended in a fumble. Then their one bad drive late, in the fourth quarter, they punted and then they kicked that field goal at the end. But I mean, they took control of this game. But when you see that first drive, that was insane. So Notre Dame converts two fourth downs on the drive. 9 minutes and 45 seconds, 18 plays. It's just absolutely like if you could have scripted, how do you start this game against a juggernaut team? Like that was it. But there's a reason why you don't run your quarterback 9 times on one drive. And yeah, it worked as far as worked. They had success, and they scored a touchdown. But you have a whole rest of the game to play. You couldn't – if you could run out the whole game, like maybe the whole first half doing that, maybe. But holy cow. He did not look, I saw later too, but just, it was not pretty. And there's a reason you don't do that. You can't run your quarterback that much. Like it's just, it's a little too much. And this is just a great defense that gave up some plays. And then you got to, after that, just there wasn't much going on. Ohio State converted their first 6 third downs. You remember we talked about Notre Dame playing a lot of man-to-man against Penn State and no Penn State wide receiver caught a pass. I mean, that was not going to work against Ohio State. You got to do some kind of, you got to zone them up. Dude, you got to figure something out. I know that's what you do well, but you could dominate like bad wide receivers doing that. You can't dominate like 3 NFL receivers doing that. And it just cost them. I mean, Will Howard, best game we saw him play, right? Like, I mean, he was really, really good. After that opening drive, there just wasn't much going on for Notre Dame. It was 28-7, 4th-and-2 in their own territory. They tried that fake punt instead of just going for it. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That was weird. Like, I think that's just one where you just have to go for it. Like, you're down 21, a team that you can't stop. They've scored every time they had the ball, scored a touchdown every time they had the ball. I think you just have to go for it there. They had gone for it earlier. I'm not sure. That was kind of a weird one. But yeah, the fake punt, I don't know. That was a weird one.
I was really impressed with Marcus Freeman throughout most of the playoffs. And then in the first half of this game, I thought he made some really good decisions on that first drive, actually. But every time they went to him on the sideline to interview him and ask him some stuff, he just seemed like he seemed a little overwhelmed, to be honest. Like he seemed kind of like, I don't have any answers for what's going on right now. And I think that was probably honest because I think Ohio State just has it's absurd how much talent they have compared to other teams. Like what they have on defense and what they have on offense, what they have at wide receiver and all that kind of stuff. They just didn't have answers for everything. And I think him being a defensive guy, he wants to be able to, like, you know, have a response. And his response was, you know, we're not executing and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, well, okay. How are you supposed to execute when they've got Egbuka, Smith, Tate, and, you know, you're, come on, man. Like, you've got to give them something more. Like, you've got to have, like, a whole elaborate game plan. You can't just, you know, run your stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it went the way you probably would have expected.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was within the range of the spread. I mean, Notre Dame wasn't blown off the field, but at no point did this look like Notre Dame was going to
win. Outside of the first 10 minutes, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you could tell that was like a one-off. Like, that opening drive was not going to be repeatable. Since, I mean, you got to give Riley Leonard credit. Like, he made some amazing plays on that drive, but it just took a toll. Like, it just took way too much out of him.
Very much so. It was, honestly, it was kind of similar to the Commanders on that first drive in the playoff game.
Oh, yeah.
Where they drove all the way down the field, and they only kicked a field goal, but it was like, wow, that was really impressive. And then just crushed from there on.
Yeah, they were not good.
And it's just, you know, that was kind of the way this one went.
Not bad from a guy, a quarterback that you didn't think should start at LSU and won the Heisman. So
not,
you know,
shouldn't. I predicted he never would. Very different, even worse.
I can't believe you watched the playoff game.
Yeah, I was trying to find something to do on a rainy Sunday.
Yeah, but that's very true. Like, that looked like, okay, Commanders, you're for real. But, you know, that you have to look at the first, what, I don't know why it is, but the scripted plays, the first 15 plays or whatever, that's not usually an indication of how the rest of the game is going to go. Now, for Ohio State, they were unstoppable. And to be fair, like, Notre Dame made some good plays. Ohio State just kept converting on the third downs, too. It wasn't like they were just picking up 8 yards, 10 yards. You know, they had to convert third downs, and they kept doing it. And when you can do that consistently, you're going to score points. And that, you know, touchdown, 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 touchdown to start the game, you're sort of just like, all right, this is – you just change the whole – like, this is not going to go the way you want it to go. You got to – you force Notre Dame to do stuff that they weren't comfortable doing, and it was pretty cool. But anyway – so we didn't really go over our picks for the semifinals. So both Dave and I were on Penn State in the Notre Dame game getting 1.5 points, and we got that wrong. We did take Ohio State minus 5.5 points against Texas, and we got that right. So we were 1-1 in the semis. And then Dave and I picked differently in the finals. I got it right with Ohio State. So I ended up 2-1, and Dave ended up 1-2 for the final three games there. Overall in the season, David had a pretty good year. 78-64-1 against the spread. 14 games above 500.
Mm.
You if you could have got this one right, it would have flipped, but you were 70-72-1. So two games below 500 for the season. This was not your season of picks.
No.
You had a couple of good weeks, but
no. This was rough.
It was a rough one for you. But, you know, it's the Big Ten. You're like getting used to stuff, but
getting my sea legs.
Yeah, I feel like I did good. I mean, my record's pretty good, but like there were definitely some horrible weeks in there. Like, oh my god, what was I thinking? But yeah,
I don't feel like I have any better feel for like the middle of the Big Ten than I did entering the season.
There's some tough ones in there where you're just sort of like, what's going to happen between Wisconsin and Minnesota? You know, and even like some of the mainstays where like Ohio State struggles against a Nebraska, or UCLA goes to Nebraska and wins. You know, there was some weird stuff that sort of happened there. And I think the one thing that was constant until it wasn't was the Indiana just pummeling people. Like that was like the lock of the year every week, it seemed.
Yep.
That was good. But yeah, thanks for if you followed along with our picks. If you picked along with us, sorry if you follow David, but you did better if you follow me, or maybe some mix of those. I don't know. But yeah, we have fun doing it. It's just a fun time, a little bragging rights or whatever. So then David, if he wins a year, he'll say that's the only year that's ever counted, because I think I've won most of these.
I don't think so.
I think
I don't have much memory beyond the last 2 years.
Oh.
Actually, this year's getting a little foggy. I remember 2 years ago very clearly.
Nice. Do we have to redo, like, the power ranking is pretty much the same, right?
Or yeah, we're not redoing
I don't
this.
Think we're going to do all that kind of stuff. Okay, cool. There was some other news. I mean, I don't know if you have anything, but there was, while I was gone, I was getting some text messages. Coordinators switching, and Penn State losing their defensive coordinator to Clemson. I think we mentioned that.
Did we mention Ohio State losing their defensive coordinator to Penn State?
So because Penn State, it's like a peer-to-peer thing, but Clemson's not, they're an ACC team. It's not like an SEC team steals it. Last year, USC stole UCLA's defensive coordinator, Danton Lynn. And it's typical for USC, like if he was successful without like a lot of great players. I mean, their defense got a lot better. Penn State went after him. He played football at Penn State. And to the point where I was getting texts like, James Franklin had an in-home visit with Danton Lynn in LA, coming out here to see him. And USC stepped up and paid him, and he's staying at USC. So that's not something I've seen from USC before. So I'll give credit to like Jen Cohen, former Washington AD. I think they're trying to take this seriously and pay the right people or whatever, but I don't know, whatever. Like,
hard to pay the right people when you're paying so much money to the wrong guy.
That's the other thing too. It's like you can't fix your head coach, so you have to fix the other stuff. So they went out and kept him, but that seemed to really, I don't know what that did to Penn State, because then they go to Ohio State and take Jim Knowles, their great defensive coordinator, and pay him over $3 million a year. He's the highest paid. I mean, that's insane. So I don't think they offered Lynn that, but I feel like getting rebuffed from that effort, they were going to like, we're not going to get shut out again here. And so go and get Jim Knowles. Now I think USC, everyone on board wanted to keep Danton Lynn from what I was told. I don't think that was the case. There's been different reports out there. I've talked to some Ohio State people that the Ryan Day, Jim Knowles relationship, there was issues there. I think Brett McMurphy reported that if he didn't sign the extension, they didn't want him to come to the national championship parade or something. I mean, some silly. So there was some weird stuff going on. So I don't know if Penn State needed to pay him $3.1 million, but it seemed like Ohio State wasn't going to match it. It was one of those things where, like, he's great. They had the number one defense in the country, but for some reason they weren't getting along. It's a weird one to me. Like, that's not a guy I would want to lose if I'm Ohio State. But anyway, Penn State gets their guy. He was amazing at Oklahoma State. Obviously, wins a national championship at Ohio State, and now Penn State gets him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge hire. If you paid any attention to Ohio State the last couple of years, the strength has been by far the defense. Even this year, where the offense was significantly improved from last year, still, this is the elite defense is what,
number one defense.
Well, it's what nearly won them the Michigan game that they had no business winning, given how horrible the offense was in that game. This defense showed up every single game. So that's a big blow. I mean, I don't. Whenever you start hearing that sort of stuff, that kind of reeks a little bit of Pete Carroll and the way he would treat his coordinators sometimes, where it was an ego clash, when he was in his like middle to late stages at USC, where there'd be like a little bit of, I just don't want another huge voice in the room. Hopefully that's not happening to Ryan Day.
No, I think that's a good parallel. They had Norm Chow, like Pete Carroll had Norm Chow. And yep. There was issues, where there was like Norm Chow's offense and Pete Carroll kind of wanted it to be his, he never really recovered from that. They won a bunch of games, but they didn't win a national championship after Norm Chow left. But I would have liked, it's working so well, figure out a way. Like I one of the guys I follow on Twitter, I saw on Twitter, they talked about there was like a defensive assistant that they wanted to like it's and that was the parallel where like you have the guru guy, you have Knowles, and you had like Chow, but you had like Sarkisian and Kiffin under him, and the head coach sort of wanting their input in things, and it's like, why are you messing with the guru when you got the young guys? I think there was a little, correct me if I'm wrong, any Ohio State fans in there, but one of the assistants they sort of had input there, and there was talk about in the Oregon game that assistant was having more input, and then they just let Knowles run it, and that's when they went on their run. I don't know how true all that is, but there was some trouble in paradise in there. These are alpha males. You know, their personalities don't always get along, but you'd love to see it. It works so well. Chip Kelly might be going to the NFL or something. We'll see. I mean, there's not much more he can do there. But I would have liked to see Knowles stick around, because that defense, it certainly helped retaining all those players and having a bunch of first round draft picks on your defense. But man, it was really freaking good. And you know Jeremiah Smith, but man, the defense kept them in a lot of those games.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, so Bob, we have some comments. Sorry, the wrong one popped up. Bob, was it Bootzilla?
Bootzilla.
Knowles wasn't mistreated. He was asked to change his defense after the Oregon game. He didn't like that. Day told him to change and then left. Okay, so maybe there was some issues. I don't know. I mean, like, going on the road to Oregon and losing by a point, I'm not sure I want to, like, change everything after that. But I don't know all the stuff that was going on there, but it's... Yeah, their number one defense. So he was doing something right.
Yep.
All right, cool. So we take a break and then do some questions?
Let's do it.
You seem like you're out of it right now. Are you doing something?
Just work.
Oh, okay. Because we're recording a podcast actually right now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break and we'll get to your questions. Alrighty, we're back here. Yeah.
I was interrupting you.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
We're back.
We are.
We got some questions. If you're in the chat, we do appreciate that. You can put questions in the chat. We'll go through some of the emails. We didn't get to questions last show, so we'll do some of those. Hopefully they're still relevant, but I think a lot of them came before the national championship game. And if you have a question in the chat, put it in there and we'll get to it as well.
All right, so this first one from Frank. I blame you for Penn State's loss.
Yeah, you want to start?
Okay. Yes. This is from Frank Magellans. Without the NCAA, all right, I blame you for Penn State's loss. Without the NCAA, quote, death penalty in 1987, SMU would have become the top program in Texas and possibly a college football blue blood, given its strong recruiting and success under Jimmy Johnson in the 1980s. The penalty set the program back significantly, but now with legalization, SMU is making a strong comeback, as proved by reaching the CFP so soon after the NIL era began. With its financial resources and revitalized program, all of us Pockers?
I don't know what that is.
No. POCers agree that SMU and Cal are the premier teams in the ACC, a far cry from its earlier struggles caused by Texas and Texas A&M rigging the NCAA against them. James Franklin listens to this podcast. When he heard you claim the SMU win didn't break his curse, he believed you. That is why Penn State lost to Notre Dame. If you had just admitted SMU and Boise were headlining wins, Franklin would have been focused on winning the game instead of watching out for rogue pianos, and I'd be on a plane to Pasadena right now. Thanks for ruining our season, Frank Magellans. I like the theory.
Yeah, it's good theory, Frank.
Hi, James. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you.
Congrats on snagging Jim Knowles away. Yeah, I don't know, Frank. I don't know if you can blame us for it, but sure.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Cool. All right. This Amazon, that's not something.
That's not a thing.
Okay. See, I like when we get spam, Dave just leaves it there. I like archive it, get it out of the way so we don't have to go through it. But what the Trojans need from Frank in Sacramento, he's notorious for not having a question, mostly just statements, but they're short. They're easy to read, so we will always read them. USC needs to bring Ed Orgeron back to coach defensive line and yell at the kids. Riley is too quiet and cerebral.
No, what they need is a new head coach.
Yeah, I think that's a better move.
When the head coach is not good, you know what you do? You get a new one. You don't try to bolster him with, a defensive line coach. That's not going to help. I mean, I like the thought because you're dealing with reality, which is they can't fire Lincoln Riley right now, but you're not going to do anything to fix him. He's just bad.
No, I mean, like, Ed Orgeron's a great defensive line coach. he's been a head coach. Does he want to do something like that? But I think people get familiar. You know, there's someone that they know and they just want to go back to it. Like, oh, that worked. I want to go back to that. They have a very good defensive line coach in Eric Henderson, who coached Aaron Donald. You know, he's been really good on the recruiting trail. They've signed some really big free agents, on the defensive line. They brought in some guys. I don't think that's the solution there.
No. We got a text message. This is from 2 weeks ago, which is very funny.
Okay.
It's UCLA basketball question.
And oh my God.
This is coming off of a 4-game losing streak where they looked really bad. They've now won 4 straight.
Oh, okay.
UCLA basketball question. Where are you at with Mick Cronin? He gave us some good memories, which he has done for what he has done for NIL is very commendable, but this team doesn't seem to be hearing his voice. We're not optimizing this roster and high school recruiting isn't going swell. Even if we turn this around, UCLA shouldn't need to suffer 4 to 5 games a year before riding the ship. It feels like there are way too many self-imposed restrictions from the coach in terms of how hard it is to get used to him, recruits who don't want to play for him, etc. Look, obviously you wrote this at a low point. It's now a higher point. But I don't think your concerns are invalid. Reality is there is an adjustment period to Mick Cronin. Newcomers have an adjustment period. And the important thing that he needs to do going forward is understand that and build that into how he builds a team. I do think there is something to be looked at in terms of post-evaluations, because this is yet another sequence where I think picking the wrong guy to play the five, starting with Jalen Hill, Cody Riley early on. I thought Jalen Hill was a much better player. Continuing on to Cody Riley, Miles Johnson was a much better player. And now on to Adai Mara, Tyler Bilodeau. Adai Mara is a much better player. All of those things, I think, should be looked at. But I think the reality is he's a good teacher. He's a good developer. Guys do get better. And for whatever reason, I mean, he's a screamer, but for whatever reason, these guys do not want to leave in droves. So I do think there is some connective thing he does with his teams that does bring them, you know, to wanting to stay in the program. But there are issues for sure. And I think he needs this season to be successful. And it's obviously trending better right now than it was 2 weeks ago. But he needs this season to be successful as a proof of concept for this transfer heavy recruiting style. Because there's only so many different bushes you can beat. You know, they tried the international thing last year. It didn't work. Now it's transfer recruiting. Well, if this doesn't work and this was a handpicked team with plenty of NIL resources, then what's the next avenue? Or do you try again or what? So I think, you know, the roster management is probably the biggest like concern at this point in terms of, you know, going forward for Mick.
All right. We are not a basketball podcast, and I get it that UCLA is a basketball school, but this is not what we talk about on the show. So
it's the offseason, baby.
That doesn't count as an offseason topic.
Yes.
Does not count as an offseason topic. Okay.
Let me tell you about Adai Mara.
Next, I had to Google who that was. Like, I didn't know.
He's 7'3".
Wow, really?
Yeah. Didn't just grow to that last night either.
Okay. Small suggestion from Paul/Webfoot. Dear champions, USC fans are always complaining about Oregon's NIL money because apparently they are poor and sad. So I suggest we stop calling them $C and start calling them US cent sign.
I like it.
Much love, Paul. Anyway, which is funny about this, and there are fans complaining. I don't understand it either. Like, if you're, and I get, and I run into Oregon fans that are like really defensive about like, we didn't spend this much money. Who cares? You're allowed to spend the money. You have a billionaire that's willing to write blank checks. I would be proud of that. Well, like, that's a great thing. Like, if you're the New York Yankees, or you're like, I mean, Pirates fan. Like,
yeah.
We always had a poor team. Like, I would have loved to have been the Yankees or the Dodgers or whatever, and like just spend money like going crazy.
I've got a great basketball analogy.
Okay,
it's like being 7'3", and people talking about it as if like, oh, well, he's 7'3", he should be able to do that, and the fact that he can't is blah. Well, he's 7'3", so he can rebound standing still. He can dunk it without jumping.
Yeah,
that's cool. That's great. Basketball is advantage tall people. You know what's advantage rich people? College football right now. It's not a disadvantage. It's not anything to, when USC fans, to Oregon fans say, well, you bought your team, you'd say, hell yeah, we did. Why are you so poverty stricken?
Yeah. USC bought a lot of their...
Well, frankly, here's the great thing for you USC fans that you should know. You're not poverty-stricken. You've got plenty of money. You've got a stupid head coach. He doesn't want to spend the money because he's stupid. He's not smart in the head. His brain is bad. He thinks in this theoretical possibility that having too much money for one player could upset the locker room instead of dealing with the physical reality that Ohio State just spent, like, I don't know, $75 million to win a national title. Did they have locker room issues? Certainly didn't seem like it when they won the national title a week ago.
Yeah. I mean, they did lose their defensive coordinator and all that stuff. But, man, you just – I get – and I think that's the one underrated aspect about it. And it is nice to have essentially unlimited funds. Like, that is a luxury that most other schools do not have. But you also have a head coach and a recruiting staff that's really freaking good at doing what they do, at acquiring talent. And you still have to recruit. Yes, it helps to have – to be able to outbid people. But if they don't think – if a prospect doesn't think you care – I mean, there's chances that you wouldn't go there just because you paid the most money. So you still have to recruit hard as well. And it, I think Oregon does all of that very well. It's not just the writing the check. Of course, that's – I mean, that could be a major part of it. When you have that in your back pocket, like, oh, yeah, we're going to recruit you. We're going to blah, 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 blah. Oh, by the way, here's more money than anyone else can pay you. Like, that helps. But you would get turned down a lot more if you weren't as good of a recruiter as – Landanning and that staff are.
Yeah, you got to do it all.
Yeah.
You got to be good. All right, I think that voicemail we're not going to listen to because it's so old. This is from Kevin. Going forward on fourth down, do analytics take into account your team's success at the distance to go on fourth down, or is it the overall success of everyone? Do you know what other factors go into the go for it on kick punt analytics? So, Kevin, great question. When I'm citing analytics, I'm generally using freely available information, which is mostly not team specific. It's just kind of general, like, you know, and broad strokes, the general stuff is good enough. For the teams who contract out with analytics companies, they get much more robust data. It's not just the general. It's what your team does on fourth down, maybe what certain play calls are good on fourth down, what the other team does on fourth down, how that matchup factors in. Time and score matters a ton. Like, all of that stuff factors in when you're doing it at the team level. And they have analytics companies that they contract out with. And there's probably several other factors I'm not even considering. But they get a lot of information. But if you just did the broad strokes of the fourth down calculators that you can find online, you'll be right more often than not. I would say those are probably 95% accurate, and then there's edge cases depending on matchups.
I was listening to Colin Cowherd the other day, and he was talking about, because we saw some like early 2-point conversions in that I think it was the Commanders game that you had mentioned, and going forward, he's like, you know, just kick the damn extra point. I get it, like, you have these analytics stuff, but then you see the success rate and it's very low. Like, it's not like, I think people look at 2-point conversions as like a 50-50 thing, and it's not. And then in certain situations, it's a lot worse. And do you want to use your best 2-point conversion play in the first quarter? You want to save it for the end, that kind of stuff. Like, where do you fall on that? Because it made kind of sense. I know you might not be taking math into consideration, but it's like some of those coaches are just like, just kick the extra point. But I kind of tend that way too sometimes, where it's like, are you chasing points? And
you mean the down by two scores go for the extra point or go for the two?
It was like, I think the Commanders scored and it was 14-12 and they went for two and they didn't get it. But it's the first quarter or like early in the second quarter or something like that. Is there something to be said that you only have so many good 2-point conversion plays and you don't need to, even if you could be successful and make it 14-14, like, did you waste an opportunity later in the game when it would have been more important?
I don't know enough about the Commanders to know like how good their 2-point stuff is. I would say, like, broad strokes, some of these decisions are marginal enough that you're not making or losing money doing either way. And I would say that one is probably in that realm.
Okay.
Because it is so early in the game. When you get later in the game is when these things start to have more import, because it's just, you know, more game has happened. You have so much more information at that point, and there's only a little bit more information to go. So you've got to make the right decisions, especially, you know, third quarter and on. I mean, there's some stuff that you want to do right from the opening bunch, which is, I mean, I would say two and ones, like, I can go either way, especially in the first half. But fourth down decision making, you've got to be on point at all times, because the most important stat in games is turnovers. Everyone knows this, right? The most important thing. And to a large extent, the traditional turnovers are not controllable. Interceptions happen at a pretty defined rate based on tipped passes. You know, if you, I think it's tipped, generally correlates to seven tipped passes, that'll lead to one interception. Like, there'll be one interception and seven tipped passes. Fumbles are basically 50-50. Forcing fumbles is a thing, but it's really hit or miss where it ends up going. So all those things are, like, kind of not lucky, but in the realm of lucky. What isn't lucky are your controlled turnovers, and that's what people call punts or kicking deep field goals and those sorts of things. Those are controlled turnovers, and you can adjust your way of approaching those. If you treat punts as a long throw interception instead of this great thing you can do with your foot, I think people think about it differently. The way the Commanders approach fourth down makes me think they've got their analytics pretty on point, because they are really aggressive on fourth down and they are appropriately aggressive on fourth down. So I would be inclined to trust their judgment on the 2-point stuff, and it's probably marginally in their favor to go for the two. But I can also, I'm not like that crazy about the two versus one, especially in the first half.
Gotcha.
But fourth down decision making, that needs to be good all the time. And that's the part where people who say stuff like, I don't understand why you don't just kick the extra point, are also the people who say, I don't understand why you don't just punt. And the reason you don't just punt is that it's a turnover. You're giving away possession without the opportunity of scoring. So you have to be really sure you're not going to score on that drive to punt it away.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's funny when sometimes someone throws a long interception and it's justified by, like, oh, it's like a punt. But a punt's bad too. And you're like, what you're saying is, like, hey, that's a controlled turnover, you know,
yeah.
Like, if you don't have to
semi-controlled. I mean, you're kicking it off a guy's foot. He could shank it out of bounds. He could kick it and you get a touchdown return. Like, you could get the punt blocked. There's so many things that can happen on a punt, and none of them involve your team scoring. You know what happens on a deep, you know, throw? Sometimes you get picked off. Sometimes it goes for a touchdown, you know?
Yeah. I think, like, you look at the national championship game, and when Riley Leonard is running like he is, you can convert fourth downs because he's been so effective. But once that goes away, maybe that came into Marcus Freeman's decision-making, like, hey, normally we're going to rely on Leonard to pick up these fourth downs, and we just can't, so that's why we went for the fake punt, or that's why we didn't go for in the fourth and nine.
I think it's results-oriented when you complain about, like, a thing like a fake punt. Yeah, should they have maybe gone for it out of their traditional offense? Sure. But a fake punt on your own side of the field, not a horrible decision. Often they're not going to be in a coverage scheme that'll handle that. So the thing is, Notre Dame has been scouted at this point, and people know they do tricky crap on special teams all the time. So I'm sure Ohio State was prepared in some way for it. But I think however you choose to approach fourth down, I think the general thing should be math positive, you know. It's not like, don't hate analytics. Analytics are your friend, and the more you maximize your possessions, the more games you're going to win.
All right. We got an email from Oxnard Steve. Congrats to the POC. Congratulations to Ryan and David David on completing their first season covering the Bigger 10 conference as two tenors of the podcast of champions. I know you two agonized for a year on what to do with the POC and how to do it when the Pac-12 fell apart. And we all think you did an outstanding job. He's like using a lot of capitals here, in the middle of words. learning about the teams and fan bases of traditional Big Ten programs while teaching them about traditional Pac-12 powerhouses, USC and UCLA, and those other two programs. And we all learned right along with you. I am certain that all listeners of the original POC can continue their loyalty, sticking with the teams or following a new one. I know of one POC fan and contributor who converted to be a resident Rutgers fan, Scarlet Knights, while still following Stanford and doubling as our ACC correspondent. Others jumped into the Indiana Signetti bandwagon. Hold on. I gotta...
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
And some people, even though not from Illinois, fell in love with the Illini. And while no one falls in love with Ohio State, we congratulate those nuts from Columbus on a championship season. I've tried to keep this clean for Griffin's sake, and I want to thank Shane and his wife, Dylan in Albuquerque, John in Brea, Crispy Bruin, Doug, Perk, West Texas Mike, Matt, Hugh Janus, and all the others who wrote, texted, called, were interviewed, or contributed in some way to the success of the Podcast of Champions, which originates from the heart of Big Ten country and reaches a worldwide audience. I look forward to hearing more. Just keep it coming. One and all, and to the listeners who have yet to contribute, send an email while you're at work, write a text message, or call from your penthouse, basement, or trailer park and leave a voice message for our hosts and listeners. Keep it coming in 2025 and beyond. Oxnard Steve.
Beautiful.
That was amazing.
That was very sweet.
What a great email. Thank you.
This is from Frank in Sacramento. Winning seasons. It's rare, but can Michigan and Ohio State both be happy with this football season? Michigan beat Ohio State and knocked off Alabama in their bowl game. Ohio State won the national championship. Does that mean both fan bases are happy today? Probably.
I think so. So this is, remember when we were talking about
the
funniest scenario.
The funniest possible scenario happened two times. Michigan beat Ohio State. Ohio State won the national championship.
Yeah. And when we were talking about the Michigan-Ohio State game, and we're still saying, like, I still think Ohio State's like one of the best teams in the country. Uh-huh. They just had this clunker. I picked Ohio State to win the championship from the beginning. They didn't win the Big Ten championship, though.
No, I predicted that as well as the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, you did have that. But so...
just saying.
Yeah, you had Oregon winning the Big Ten, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I had Ohio State
and beating
the Big Ten.
Beating Penn State to do it.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I had Ohio State winning it all, and they did that too. Mm. But then, like, instantly at that point, we're like, the funniest thing is going to be, because at the time, as you know, and I feel terrible, like, fans, like, you know, finding his family's numbers and, like, sending threats and all that stuff. Like, that's horrible, obviously. Not condoning any of that. But to see that going on and going, well, what if Ohio State goes on and wins the national championship? And they do. And I saw somebody tweet out, I think Ryan Day was on with like Kimmel or one of the late night guys, like holding his national championship trophy. And they tweeted a picture of it. And like, could you have imagined this photo happening like the day after Ohio State loses to Michigan? And what a turnaround it is. And what percentage of the Ohio State fan base is still not happy with the season because they lost to Michigan? It's non-zero, right? There's some fans that aren't happy because they've lost to Michigan four times in a row, even though they won the whole damn thing. So I thought from that second that happened, the funniest outcome is going to be Ohio State makes a run, and you saw that Tennessee game, and you're like, rut-row. Like if they're on, holy shit. You know, like they're going to start Griffin. And they were. And they didn't. Every game wasn't that kind of blow up, but they blew out a couple of teams. Who was it? Tennessee first, and then who'd they play next? What was the – they pull up the
– Who can say with any certainty?
Why am I blanking on – hold on. Here's the thing.
Ohio they played State, Oregon.
Oregon, yes. Forget the rematch of the Oregon game. But blowing out Tennessee, totally control that game. Blowing out Oregon – and just totally controlling that game. And then, you know, having come to, you know, a really good Texas team, you know, having a hard-fought win there, did not play a game, but still were able to win it. And then, you know, really kind of taking control in that Notre Dame game after things didn't go. I mean, they won some different ways, but you saw how the juggernaut that was the sleeping giant or whatever you want to say was there. And so – to me, it played out the funniest possible thing that the fan base couldn't, you know, a month or two earlier, wanted to tar and feather this guy, and now he's being propped up as the best coach in college football or whatever. So pretty amazing. That was the funniest outcome, I think, by far.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously not the best coach in college football, but certainly did a nice job.
Yeah, I mean, It was pretty amazing. We have, I think we have one question in the chat, and then we can probably
wrap this sucker up.
Wrap it up, since you're elsewhere. El Gordo, Lincoln Riley's going nowhere for years, and the program will suffer. At what price down the line can USC afford to buy him out? 20, 30 million? So my understanding is, like, the current buyout, like, right, like, if you want to buy him out right now, is like 91 million. Now, he'll get paid this year, but it's going to be like 80 or something after this year. I think they could still do like in a Jimbo Fisher range, like in the 70s, like if they really, really had to. But I think they're hoping if to get rid of him at that point, you hope he goes somewhere else and then you can, you know, some of the cost would be, you know, they would take care of some of those costs, but yeah, I don't. You know, I don't think they have to wait to go down to 30 million if they're bad.
But we have an Ohio State fan in the wild. They've come into the chat.
Oh, okay.
The Thinker.
Should I pull it up here? Let's see.
You cover the Big Ten. And you don't even know who they played. Get it together. This is your job.
Okay.
Do you know how long ago these games happened?
Yeah.
Like several years ago. Like the quarterfinal round of the playoffs happened. I was still a young man. I was in my early 30s, I believe, when Ohio State played its rematch against Oregon. I can't remember the names of any players who played in that game. It was so long ago.
Yeah.
And you want us to remember that? First of all, this isn't our job. We do this for fun.
Yeah.
Is it fun? Who knows? We can't say with certainty. But it's not. We do not in any measurable way beyond, thank you, Matthew, for your super chat of $5, do not in any way get paid for this. This is something we do on a lark because we're stupid. and so when you say this is your job, no, incorrect. But even if it were our job, keep in mind these games happened several decades ago. I believe Woody Hayes coached in the quarterfinal.
Yeah. And Ryan Day took over.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was Rich Brooks who was coaching for Oregon in that game. And so, yeah, look, we're recapping a national championship game that took place 2 years ago. You know, Brian Kelly's final game. We remember that one, right? Where they took on Ohio State and lost 34-23. So anyway, I just think this is kind of a ridiculous criticism. Also, Ryan Day is an above average gym teacher. I would put him in the top 40 coaches. There are at least 39 guys who I would happily name if you gave me like a Wikipedia of all of the available football coaches, but I'm not going to do it off the top of my head. I'll start with Kenny Dillingham, who coaches for ASU, because, and this is important for you, the thinker, he won a game in college football, road game in college football, with a tight end playing quarterback. Ryan Day lost to Michigan 13-10. With the most talented roster in college football. These two things are not the same. So, yeah, he's fine. You won a title. Be happy.
He's a great, yeah.
Not just going to play because it's fun.
That's your Dillingham.
That's right, baby.
Drop. All right, well, we're going to wrap things up here. Yes, congratulations. The Ohio State Buckeyes. Again, we thought it was the funniest scenario. Lose to Michigan and then go on and win the national championship. Have a few fans just scratching their heads like, what's going on? So you have now fans arguing he's the best coach in college football. Who's better? You love that? Yeah, you just won a national championship. I get it. You can make that argument. But a month ago, people were saying fire the guy and draw and quarter him and shoot him to the moon.
I'll give you the boldest possible take I can. I still think they should think about firing him.
What?
Go get a better coach. Don't lose two games a year.
Oh my God.
I'm just saying. They lost two games.
That is a great.
It's the most talented team in college football. Why'd they lose two games?
Sorry, Griffin. That's a great fucking take. he just won.
Fire his ass.
The national.
Fire him into the sun.
Your hatred for Chip Kelly. He's probably going to go, right?
Promote Chip Kelly. Go for it. See how that goes.
Oh, well, yeah. What would you think there?
That'd be amazing.
No, Ryan Day's not going anywhere. His defensive coordinator did. Mm-hmm. His offensive coordinator might. Mm-hmm. Don't think that would be that big of a you know, you had to convince Chip Kelly to throw the ball to your best player a lot. So, oh, we got one last one. Jared Jones, Ohio State fan. Congrats to the championship. What do USC and UCLA fans think of their first season in the Big Ten? Like it? Dislike it?
Oh, I've got an answer here.
Go ahead. What are your UCLA peeps telling
Please
you?
Please return to all of my commentary on what the move to the Big Ten would be like 2 years ago, and you'll have a pretty good depiction of, I think, what both USC and UCLA fans think of the move, which is it kind of sucked in a lot of ways. There were some cool aspects, some new road trips. That's great. But, you know, it wasn't great. Results on the field sucked. Some of them were very much influenced by travel. And, you know, that's not great.
I loved all the road trips. I had some really fun ones.
Right, because you are a recreational tourist who likes to drink beer and eat food in different places to bookend this podcast.
But my sister was at one. Some college friends were at another. I got to go to the Big House for the first time. Like, I enjoyed it. I think a bunch of the USC fans were cool with it. I think they're more upset that it didn't look like it was going to be promising, but then they had a real opportunity to make some noise in the Big Ten this year and just weren't able to do it. I think that was the more frustrating aspect of it. I mean, but like UCLA goes to Nebraska and wins a game. Like that feels different than going to like Washington State and winning a game, right? Like there was some pump, you know, some action there for Deshaun Foster and everything after getting that win, right? Like there's some good aspects to it, I thought.
No.
No.
Does USC lose at Maryland if Maryland is located in California?
No, probably not. No. But yeah, but that I think they look at it as that that's, you know, you shouldn't have lost to Maryland. That was Maryland's only Big Ten win.
Sure.
Yes, would it, if it was at Washington State, same team or whatever, probably not.
Or at Cal?
Yeah.
Like or at Stanford?
Right. Probably not. But I think they look more of it like, man, but if you win some of these games, you beat like Minnesota, you beat Maryland, and you know, you had a lead on Penn State who was in the playoffs. You know, you were right there with Notre Dame. Like they felt like they were there and they could have made some noise. Like I think if you're like Oregon, you came in and, you know, number one in the country throughout the year, beat Ohio State. And it's sort of a really disappointing way to end it, but certainly made a name for yourself in year one in the conference. I think USC felt they could have, and they were just on the cusp of doing that. I don't know. Washington sort of like they knew they had a rebuilding year. UCLA knew you're going to have a rebuilding year. I'm curious to see what year two is like when it's everything's a little more established. You're kind of used to it more. Mm-hmm. And what kind of noise you can make. Like you want to make, you know, you can be Oregon and just like run the table and that's like taking control. Washington, USC, UCLA, like how much noise can you make? Can you take some control? Can you be in the race for the conference championship and all that? I don't know, but I think those three teams are sort of like also like they just were non-factors in a lot of the ways where Oregon was a major factor and just kind of pummeled everybody. But I don't know. Oh, we got a super chat.
USC is going to go 7-5 next year.
You think?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at the schedule and I'm telling you definitively they're going to go 7-5
nice.
Next year.
All right.
How will USC fans feel then?
They will not feel good. Yeah. No, that yeah. Like if you get to do that like 2 years in a row, like you can say, hey, you're close and could have won here. I mean, they were the only team with there were 11 games. They you know lost five, and they were they lost five games and they were leading in the fourth quarter in all of them.
I interrupted a super chat. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You got your things going on. Robert, for recreational beer and food consumption.
This goes into the Ryan Abraham Vacation Fund. Thank you, Robert. You're a champion.
That's awesome, Robert. Thank you very much. And thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
Yes.
And listening. It's been a fun season. There definitely was a lot of work doing the two shows a week and everything. We'll figure out what we're going to do going forward. But we'll keep doing the shows, keep the off-season topics going. Try not to do basketball. That's not, you know, just Disney princesses, whatever you want.
I would say basketball is actually the area where the Big Ten move has hurt the most.
Really?
Yeah. The road trips and the scheduling of the road trips has been insane for the West Coast teams.
So it's just like too much.
Too frequent travel. Like keep them out there, but don't have the back and forth. Like UCLA had to go at Nebraska, come home to Michigan, and then had to go on a 2-game East Coast swing in the span of like a week and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just brutal.
Dog's Life in Portland says women's basketball is dominated by USC and UCLA. Yeah,
that's right, baby.
UCLA is like number one in the country.
Undefeated, 20-0.
And I think USC is like four or something. So
yeah, not undefeated, not 20-0, but yeah.
They're not 20-0. Yeah. People are actually caring about women's basketball more.
I've actually watched a few games.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where I am.
I think the Caitlin Clark thing like really helped. You know?
Yeah, well, UCLA being like, Lauren Betts is like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar out there and just dominant.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, like Juju Watkins, like she's in like national commercials and stuff. Like it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, she's not as good as Lauren Betts, but yeah, she's pretty good.
I haven't even heard of Lauren Betts. I don't know. That.
Yeah, Lauren Betts is the national player of the year.
You don't think it's going to be like Juju or Paige?
Well, it depends on how many points they continue to give her at the end of blowouts. But Lauren Betts, she plays, you know, the normal amount that you do in blowouts.
Gotcha. So, okay.
You know, she, but you know, it's like 33 points, five blocks a game, you know, that sort of stuff.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up. Keep it going. Keep the off-season topics coming. We'll try not to talk hoops. Even though David covers a basketball school, we'll try to keep it to just football.
So, leap across this table.
For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.